Buzz! Buzz! Buzz!
Buzz! Welcome in to Total Ralphie Radio, I think is the official name now. We are a Ralphie Report podcast, and we talk about everything we need to talk about regarding Colorado athletics forever and always. As Sam and I mentioned prior, we are now responsible for downloads and listens. So let me just get this out of the way. Bronny James, Deion Sanders, Bronny James, and Deion Sanders. And now that we're done with that, we can get to what we actually want to talk about this year, which is the CU basketball season, how it went, and I guess more importantly, the program's future as well near the end. So we will bring in a familiar guest, a comfortable guest, and a welcome guest. Once again, we talked to him before the season and during the season. Now that it's after the season, why not do it again? Now, he is now officially a Ralphie Report All-Star. Please welcome back Benjamin Burroughs. Welcome, Rumblin' Buff.
Hey, thanks. Good to be here, guys. I am very excited to talk about 2023-2024. Let's move past 2022-2023. Let's more or less forget it ever happened. Let's move on to the future. I'm excited.
And this is part of your press tour for this Final Four that you're rocking on Twitter. Is that right?
Yeah, and more likely the people who hear this will hear it after the polls close. But yeah,
yep.
The Final Four for the number one CU Twitter fan account, I guess.
Yep.
I'm very proud to have gotten this far, but it's starting to look like this will be the end of the road. Have been teasing that I would blow up my Mel Tucker bobblehead if I was somehow able to win the entire tournament. Looks like Mel is going to be safe, which is a disappointment. But nonetheless, I appreciate everyone who has voted for me throughout the entirety of the tournament. It's very humbling to have gotten this far.
I have voted for you, and you're welcome.
I appreciate you.
That voice you just heard is Sam, one of the co-hosts.
Oh, hey.
I am Jack, one of the other co-hosts. And like I mentioned, we are going to be discussing the basketball program at length in this episode. You know, this is off the cuff, but I'm also just thinking maybe this is just bias, but I feel like we're talking about basketball more as a program now than we were like 2, 3, 4 years ago. I don't know why I feel like that, but it definitely feels like there's more options now to like actually discuss at length the basketball program and like how we feel, as opposed to a lot of people just saying fire Tad because the Skia Booker didn't make the tournament. And those people still exist and they are loud right now. But I don't know. It feels like it's been consistent enough that the discourse has gotten better. But once again, maybe that's just confirmation bias. I don't know how you guys
feel. To your point, it's certainly a more mature program. I mean, if you're talking about comparing it to football's been really bad for 15 years. Short of one explosive season in 2016. We hope now with Prime coming, and to get your numbers up, Prime. We hope now that there's a turn for the better, and a permanent turn for the better. We hope that. Basketball is a mature program. I mean, we have over a decade now of, you know, success. And while this past season wasn't living up to standards, that's a good thing. We had good standards for it to live up to. If we had won 4 games on the gridiron last year, that might have been considered a good season. To your point, I think there's more mature conversations to be had about a more mature program in terms of its development, in terms of its life.
I guess we've all moved past, and maybe that 21 NCAA tournament season helped, but I feel like we moved past the point of just like, is he, you know, Rodney Bill's recruiting years have cycled through. Is Tab Boyle done? Can we recruit? And now that recruiting's in a good spot, and like you said, standards have been raised, where an 18-17 team is disappointing. It feels like a more detailed conversation is in order. And speaking of detailed conversations, we went 2 hours in before the season with you and also Will Whalen, shout out, before the 2022-23 season to check where our expectations were, what we thought of this team and where it could go. And I do want to applaud you and Will for being pretty on the money in terms of win guess. I believe you were in the mid to high teens range and Will was a little bit lower in the like 16, 17, 18 range. So congratulations. I think Sam and I were both a touch higher than that. At least I was a touch higher than that.
Less than 20.
Okay. Yeah. I think I was right around that 20 to 19 win range. All of us had this as a almost tournament team. And sitting at 18 and 17 overall, 8 and 12 in conference, and getting bounced out of the second round of the NIT. I guess I'll say we kind of got close outside of two just horrific points in my opinion, which we can talk about in detail later. I think that's kind of where this team ended up, was an almost tournament team. Kempom has them landing right around that 70 range, I think, 75 range. Sam, you have it up maybe?
Yeah, 71.
Okay, which is near the bubble, I think, unless you're Rutgers, I guess. At the end, it's another winning season for Tab Boyle. He's now only had one losing season.
I think you're overselling. I think you're overselling the proximity to the NCAA tournament. I don't think we sniffed the bubble, even
actually,
got close.
We didn't sniff the discussion of the bubble.
Yeah.
One or two games go differently throughout the season. I'm talking about the four games we lost to teams in the KenPom 150 plus.
Okay.
You flip two of those, we're right there, because our profile as it was at the end of that game against UCLA in Las Vegas, we're 58th at KenPom. I had throughout the season, I never really talked about this, I played around on Bartorovic, which allows you to adjust things and move things. Oh, hey, what if we won this game, or what if we had lost that game? And I played around with that a couple times, and I changed two games, and all of a sudden we're in his tournament. Now we're a last four game, but we're still in his tournament.
And those would be Cal and UMass?
Grambling and Cal, right?
Actually, Grambling ended up not being that bad of a loss. Which
Conference champ!
There are fourth worst loss. Massachusetts, Cal, and Oregon State were all worse than them. So
Oregon State. Oh my God.
I forgot. I blanked that game.
Yeah, if you would have flipped Cal and Oregon State, our profile isn't that bad. Plus, that win against Tennessee does a lot.
Yeah.
It does a lot of weight in terms
and the
of
demolition of A&M, I would imagine. Just
those two wins carried a lot of weight. Now, we didn't have much past that, but even wins over Arizona State on the road, I mean, that looked good. That was a good win. Oregon at home, another good win. It wasn't a profile completely devoid of life. And particularly if we had scalped UCLA or USC in that final week, all of a sudden we would have been in that range to be talked about. Now, were we a tournament team? God, no.
Yeah.
But profile-wise, it wasn't too far off.
Well, Sam, we talked about
this. I didn't
even. We had two teams in the tournament, right? Like, we just in terms of when we were picking brackets, I liked like four teams and they all.
Oh, yeah. No, I was about to say
immediately. So I was wrong. Yeah. But, you know.
Yeah. Like, thanks for the bracket help. I was going to say like maybe we could have been on the bubble, but I think it's like it was a weak year for college basketball. Like, the bubble teams just weren't that good. I didn't even realize that we were going to make the NIT until we got announced. Because
we got a higher seed.
Yeah, we got a good
seed. No, that was a surprise to me. I didn't even think that was going to happen. Like, I didn't quite understand.
Well, and to be fair, a lot of teams did say no. There was a lot of teams that just completely destroyed themselves at the end of the year and said no. Dayton said no. UNC said no.
Yeah.
A few of the other ones.
I don't know what happened at Dayton. All their players.
Anthony Grant is going to do a full rebuild, and this is like his last year, his last chance, which is interesting given where he was when CU played Dayton.
Because he had like literal NBA buzz.
And he done it before at Bama and was okay there too. So we're not talking about Dayton. The end of the year.
Not yet. We'll talk about them later.
18-17. Lost to Utah Valley at home, who then ended up losing to UAB in the Final Four of the NIT to end the season. Winning season is secure. The 20-win mark, however, was elusive. And I think this team passed the 2014 team. Well, I shouldn't say that. This team passed the Derek White senior year team. Was definitely the most frustrating experience I had watching CU basketball. So I guess I'll lead that into our segment of what went wrong this year or our least favorite parts of this year's team. And I found them frustrating to watch.
Yeah, and there's a number of things that I take for granted with this program that this season really didn't fulfill on. You know, we talked about the four losses to bad teams. Typically, Tad maybe has one bad loss. This year, we had four. We had four losses that more or less were inexcusable, each one of them. None of them were at home, but Grambling on the road. Awkward game, yes. They were better this year than expected, yes, but you can't lose that. UMass had a terrible season, 212th in KenPom or whatever. Can't lose to that team. No excuse there. And if you win that game, based on how the bracket worked out, you're probably winning that tournament down in South Carolina. Oregon State, garbage. No excuse to losing to them. And Cal, oh my God. To hand Mark Fox a gift like that win going out the door. Again, inexcusable. Absolutely inexcusable. I don't care when the game is played. I don't care what the situation is. You can't be losing that team. So,
and also, like, to come back like they did the second they started trying.
Yeah.
They didn't start trying for 35 minutes.
Yeah.
That was horrible.
Yeah. And you know, on top of that, four home conference losses. And that's the second straight year we've had that.
Mm.
Yeah.
The idea of the CEC as this fortress is starting to get some chinks in the armor. And more to that point, the crowd just wasn't good night in, night out. It was kind of crappy. It was a bad crowd most nights. And that's a problem. That's a program problem.
Yeah.
That's a Colorado basketball fan problem. Like, that's something I can address by going there and being into the games and things like that. That's, you know, the listeners to this podcast, you can address showing up to the game and being into it and trying to help the team win. Four conference losses, that's inexcusable. We can't have that many if we're ever going to compete for, you know, top flight Pac-12 little teams. Realistically, other stuff that really kind of drove me nuts this year, you know, 10th out of 12 offenses in the Pac-12, our, you know, worst three-point shooting effort since 2014, worst free throw shooting effort since 2013. You know, part of that is injuries. We had a lot of injuries this year, injuries to two starters and a key rotational six man down the stretch. But throughout the year, injuries never really helped. And because of that, there was some fit issues. But more to your point, Jack, like, why did this season feel bad? Team chemistry was off. It was, it didn't fit, didn't work. There's very clearly a leadership void that maybe some people were fighting over. Maybe some people were trying to be that leader, you know, like Gabadon, I think, tried as a, you know, Gabadon Wright as incoming senior transfers, I think tried, but there was very clearly a lack of leadership in the team. And I think some dudes just kind of checked out, and that's not good. You can't have that. That's bad.
To your point about coin flips,
names, are we gonna wait off air for that?
We're gonna, well, we can talk about that when we look at personnel later, transfers in and out potentially, but Sam, any thoughts about what went wrong past what we just heard there? Do you mostly agree?
Also that the wings, as we've talked about a lot of times, like, the wings just were not good enough.
Nope.
They didn't hit shots, they didn't play consistent defense, they didn't make smart, snappy decisions when they got the ball.
Yeah,
It made everybody's jobs harder, especially KJ Simpson.
Until Ethan Wright in the last four games of the year, he made smart, snappy decisions from time to time.
Yep.
He decided to shoot.
Yep.
I was going to talk about Ethan. Ethan had four straight games. The last four games of his career, he was over 100 in offensive rating. The kid closed well, and the taste in my mouth of Ethan Wright, and I dogged him a little bit in the last podcast we did. Like, the taste of my mouth of him leaving, it's like, oh, yeah, he had an all right year. And it's not where he was a month ago.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. We sang his praises last pod, but, like, I basically said, like, he was what we needed him to be all year, like, at the end. Like, he is what we needed from that wing. And, like, I'm really happy he turned it on at the end.
I'll tell you, I guess this will be something that we might talk about what went right, but it was too small for that. I was not expecting him to be such an incredible finisher at the rim, but dude is really good at finishing at the rim. Really good at layups. I always thought he'd get smacked, and it never got blocked. So to your point about coin flip games too, four home losses, UCLA and USC, you kind of expect the USC just dumped on CU, and you never like to see that.
That was a horrible game, just generally.
That was rock bottom.
Just complete no show.
However, like that was checkout. Like dudes I saw that just had nothing going on in their effort, in their mental process that game. That was full on mental checkout.
Yeah, I will say the other two losses are Washington and a very close one, which you have to win that. It shouldn't even be close, but it was a close loss. And then ASU on a buzzer beater in early December. Another one where, like, if those flip the other way, 4 points, you're looking at a 20-10 or 20-win team with 10 conference wins. And that's not even talking about Cal or Oregon State. So, yeah, those home losses add up, and you cannot lose four times. At home, like you said, if you expect to be a top half Pac-12 team. I think, Sam, the last thing I'll say in terms of what went wrong for me is I think the roles were just messed up this year. I guess that's now that I thought about it a lot, that's like the concise way I have to put it. Javon Hadley, I love Javon Hadley. He should not be playing 30-plus minutes a night, I don't think, on a contending Pac-12 team and expected to do what he does, you know?
I would say – go ahead.
I might push back on that a little bit in terms of I think he's talented enough to be in the Pac-12. He's maybe a little undersized, but we played him out of position, right? We were playing him as a three, or we needed him to be more of a three to complement Tristan, and he just wasn't capable of doing that. You know, he can't take an outside shot. Or at least he didn't this year. Maybe he can. He just didn't show it. he's good enough rebounder to do the job as a four. But when you had Lawson and him on the court at the same time, that's not a good recipe. If we wanted to play small with him as the four and Tristan as the five or vice versa, I think that might have worked a little bit better. We had way too many guys. To your point, we had way too many guys on the court at the same time who couldn't stretch the court. And so everything kind of gummed up, and ultimately, I think that's part of why it felt like a fit issue. And towards the end of the season, Hadley's injured, right? He's off, and that kind of more streamlined things in terms of, all right, now we've got we're forced to play these seven dudes, and it's a little bit more of a balanced package, and that's why you saw a little bit more balance offensively towards the end of the season.
Yeah, I really like Javon Hadley. I think I would love Javon Hadley at like 20 minutes a game, either on the bench, on the starting or off the bench, just pure energy and junk and hustle, everything we love him for anyways. But I think there's a problem when Tad Boyle's expecting him. He needs more minutes from him because there's other places on the team that he's just not getting what he needs from that. So to Sam's point, I think the 2-4 was just kind of a weird revolving door disaster for a lot of the year. And that as it streamlined got better, but Javon Ruffin got hurt. He couldn't do some of those minutes, you know. Nick Clifford was just unreliable at best. Julian Hammond is more of like a point guard, you know, it's just weird fit. And then Wright and Gabadon was hurt half the year, Wright couldn't be him. You know, there was just not good options there. I think it just led to weird role issues and wasn't fun to watch a lot
and of the time. Could you speak on what you've seen from Hammond as a sixth man versus as a starter? Because like he has massive splits in terms of stats.
I'm sure. I haven't looked at the splits specifically, but in my mind's eye, there's certainly a difference between him as a backup and him as the lead. When KJ goes out injured, his turnover rate goes down. Yeah. His 3-point shooting goes up. His offensive rating goes up. Overall his effectiveness in the offense goes up. I don't know if our performance in Vegas is as good as it was if it was KJ leading the offense as opposed to Julian, for example. Mm-hmm. And that's not to slight KJ, but just who they are and how they play against the zone, I think it ended up working out well for us in that moment. My mind's eye, and this is sort of a similar issue. We go back a couple years ago when Keyshawn Bartholomew was spelling McKinley Wright. If Keyshawn was looking over his shoulder because he knew Kim was about to come back in the game, he played like crap.
Yeah.
If McKinley is out either injured or, you know, is with foul trouble or whatever, and Key was like, all right, this is my ball, I'm fine, he would play pretty well. So it's almost like a similar situation where as a starter, Hammond was much more effective for me.
Yeah. I'm just trying to, wonder, like, I've been thinking about this and I still don't understand it. Like, if you have that sixth man role and you're a combo guard and you're playing 20 something minutes a game, like, that's a decent amount. And most of that time you get the ball. I just don't quite get. I think it's because I like the mentality of the sixth man of just go out there and you are the offense while you're on the floor. But I'm having a hard time, like, understanding why he struggles as that bench spot. And like, is there more to that mentality of watching the other guy coming in?
I would imagine it has to do with rhythm and feel. You're coming into a game and you're trying to catch up to the biorhythm. Oftentimes, as a six man, particularly in Tad's offense, particularly early in the game, you're playing with the twos as opposed to the ones because he rotates early like that. You know, he very quickly goes to the bench after the first media, and he rotates through his eight or nine or however many he's going to play that night. So that might be part of it. He's playing with the twos as opposed to the ones. Rhythm and feel would be another. You're coming off the bench. Do you hit right away? Not that sort of thing. Julian always struck me as taking more chances when he was coming off the bench. So that might be a perspective thing. Like, okay, I want to make a mark on the game kind of thing. So maybe that's part of it. What in my mind, what who's a good, you know, sixth man, seventh man kind of thing? It's all about energy. I look at a guy like Luke O'Brien, right? Like that's the kind of guy I'm thinking of, and it's not a point guard. You need a second point guard. Your sixth man, quote unquote, shouldn't be your backup point guard, at least in my perspective. Your sixth man
I
should
think of
be
it.
more like a wing.
I think I come from like the Monte Morris Nuggets backup point guard type of
Okay, sure.
thinking, where I like that second guy who can come in, be another ball handler, and be kind
Well,
of a two guard who can shoot. What?
I Monte Morris, that's a weird to me. That's weird because it's like,
I
isn't he
know.
third point guard really? Like, isn't it
What?
Jokic, then Murray, then
Oh,
Morris?
point center.
I mean, I could have picked a different player, but like I was thinking more just like I could pick Tyus Jones.
That's a good one.
But I think we might be getting in the weeds a little bit too much too early, and that's my bad.
To me, I think I like the sixth man is what's the stay ready guy, right? Where he just comes in and he's him no matter what. And I feel like Hammond has to like settle in into a game, if that
Yeah.
makes sense. Like it
Okay.
feels a lot more like if you give him a little bit of time, he can figure out where people are going. Then, you know, in that Pac-12 tournament, he was throwing like dimes. And I remember that we talked about it in the Washington game. That pass to Ethan Wright, where Ethan Wright blew the layup, and I thought, see, he was going to lose. I was like, that's an incredible pass. He's an incredible pick and roll operator, and I think it just takes him a little bit to like figure out where everyone is on the court speed wise.
Okay.
I don't know. In a weird twist of fate, you're never going to put KJ off the bench, but like KJ is a good example of like he's going to do him no matter what. You give him 5 minutes, he's going to do the same thing he does in 30 minutes, right? Like, there's no difference in how he plays.
Also going to ask Ben, how do you make sense of KJ's performance in conference play?
In terms of,
Because
did it
it
drop?
was, oh, I mean, yeah, pretty significantly, but part of that was,
Well, let's put numbers to it, Sam. What are you seeing?
sorry, let me, my computer's freaking out, so I'm trying to get it together.
Do you want me to give you numbers from KenPom? Would that help you?
No, I'm stat reference has better conference. Yeah.
His numbers did
But
go down.
his
Part of it is.
efficiency went down
Yeah,
really
efficiency
bad.
went down by about 8 points. Usage was more or less the same. Assist rate was more or less the same. Realistically, what is the difference here? He couldn't hit a three-pointer in conference. He shot 17 of 80 from, as I'm looking at it right now, 17 of 80,
Oh,
21%.
boy.
He shot 21% from three in conference. That's the difference. If he's making 30% of those, our perspective of him in conference play is completely different. If he made what he did in non-conference and conference play, our perspective is completely different. So that's the key difference. Last year, he was 27%. This year, he was 21% in conference. And I mean, even that last year is not good.
No.
So the 3-point shot continues to be the big question mark with KJ. Because his teammates couldn't take that, you know, pressure off of him. Like he was the only one taking threes for a number of games because no one else wanted to take them. And ultimately I think that kind of cascades, right? If there was a little bit less pressure on him to make those threes, like maybe that's different because he was one of the few people who could create his own shot.
Yeah.
He took three less threes than Tristan Da Silva did. And Tristan Da Silva shot 41% from three in conference.
Yeah, well, my other
not good.
Concern with him was that, well, I know he was dealing with the ankle injury. And again, like the lack of wing play really hurt him, especially when Pac-12 opponents adjusted and kind of game planned to take him out. But I am a little concerned moving forward that on his off shooting nights, he kind of just keeps shooting and tries to get out of.
He has to though. That's his style. Like a shooter scorer like that. That and that's his mentality. Yeah. He's okay. Got to shoot out of it. And there's some dudes that I've seen. You know, like that's how they have to operate. You know, and if he became gun shy, that's almost even worse. Because okay. Now you as a defender don't need to worry about him if he's cold and checks out like Neek, right? Like Neek would, if he misses the first couple shots, he checks out, he's not going to take that shot anymore. Then you don't have to worry about him defensively. That becomes a problem. Kind of going back to it. Okay, so I finally found the numbers I was looking for. Tristan Da Silva, right? Just brought up really efficient score, right?
Yeah.
And he very clearly was the best offensive player on the team. Best number, certainly. Assist percentage, number of his 3-point attempts that were assisted, 87%. Number of KJ's 3-pointers that were assisted, about 60%. 60%. So he's got to create his own shot more often than Tristan does.
Yeah.
Tristan catch and shoot, whereas KJ's got to create. So that's the difference. And he just couldn't find the shot, and that's different. He becomes easier to guard if he's not, one, taking the shots, and then two, not making them.
Yeah, it did remind me of a Deion Waiters quote of, I'd rather go 0 for 18 than 0 for 4, because 0 for 4 means I lost confidence.
Yeah.
And I guess I want to push back on this perception of KJ a little bit. I thought he did a good job improving this year of when he realized it wasn't necessarily his night to start. He would go to the rack, and that's where we all know, I think, that he's really good, is getting in as soon as possible in the lane.
The other thing I really want to applaud KJ for, he cut his turnover rate almost in half. He made some much better decisions this year over year from his freshman year. He showed a lot of development there. So definitely want to applaud him for that as well.
This is a good, what went my transition? We took a tiny bit of what I was talking about there. But I guess I want to start with Sam. I know we just mentioned this, Sam, but what went right for you this year? What was fun to watch for you this year?
I'm trying to like to not recycle my old answers to this, but I'll try my best. Well, Da Silva's emergence as a go-to scorer was great for me personally, because I just love his game. So I just love to just see him do his weird little drives. I wish he would be a little bit more aggressive, and I wish he would try a little bit harder on defense. I was very happy with Luke O'Brien going balls to the wall. I think that he adds a certain tenacity to the team that they just didn't really have. Javon Ruffin was great when he played. It's just, I don't know how much he plays. And yeah, like the KJ scoring barrages when he was on were fantastic. And it's good to see him grow like immature as a natural point guard, because it was a big adjustment for him to take that. And this was a transition year for him going from sixth man to starter. That's kind of where I'm at. And then Ethan Wright's last four games. That was a nice little bright spot to end the year.
Yeah, if we're talking about like what was fun about this year, you know, Tristan was fun. I enjoyed watching Tristan, particularly the second half of the season. Luke, fun. Down the stretch, Luke was fun to watch. You know, it's said balls of the wall. Like, he is a fun player to watch when he's locked in. KJ, fun player. Like, there's some fun pieces to this program still. And just because we had a dour year, I don't want to completely look past that. Like, there was some fun to be had. You know, we also had some really nice wins. Like, you know, we talked about it before, A&M, Tennessee. Like, we kept Dana from beating Tad and Boulder. Like, that's fun. I had fun that night. I had fun, you know, watching us beat Washington and send Mike Hopkins out with his rolled up sleeves all despondent and all that. Like, that was fun to me.
Yeah. The UCLA loss was fun too.
Yeah, like, I was going to bring that up. Like, we fought to the end. So we talked about rock bottom, that USC game, absolute rock bottom. We fought hard against UCLA the next, you know, two nights later. We fought hard against UCLA in the tournament. You know, we
bad ball, baby.
You know, Utah, like the Utah game at home. I thought we were going to, I thought that was a terrible matchup.
Skeleton crew, man.
And we punched it with skeleton crew. We punched him in the mouth. You know, the team showed backbone in the final couple games of the season. Yeah, you know, Utah Valley, that was a real tough matchup for us. And, you know, I saw that coming a mile away. But you know, even beating a Seton Hall at home, like, that's a tough team. And the Buffs showed a lot of spine in making sure we got that win at home over Seton Hall.
I will also attest, I did see on Twitter before that Utah Valley game, I can confirm that you were.
Yeah, I was like, guys, you may want to run the book on this one. You want to money is on the table to be made tonight, guys.
Who's excited to see Trey Woodbury at Cal next year?
Huh?
Now that Mark Patton's there.
No, I don't want to lose to them again.
60-year senior, God. Man.
Please, God. This all boils down to this. Like, ultimately, we had a really good defense this year. We had a really good rebounding team this year. And so from someone who has grown to really love defense and rebounding, you know, we were number 31 in the country, number two in the Pac-12 in defensive efficiency. And we were number one in the Pac-12 in rebounding, defensive rebounding. And we were number one in the Pac-12 with defending the three. Like, okay, you can build on that. That's foundation. So going into next year, got to have the same mentality, got to have the same focus. Now just tighten up some things offensively, find a couple shooters, you're golden.
And that's after they slumped kind of at the end of the year, too.
And that's a slump. They were much higher earlier. Yep.
Yeah, they were like 18th best defense for like a lot of the season. Mm-hmm. Like, legit elite unit.
While we were playing a more up-tempo style, too. There was more possessions in the game, and yet we were still a crazy efficient defense.
I am dubious to see if that continues, given obvious changes, but we shall see. I guess I'll finish up with what I liked. I think we all just agreed, you know, Luke O'Brien, lots of boards emerging at the end of the year. Just the classic. That's just going to be a Tad Boyle cries at a senior day guy now. Like, that's just a guy that Tad's just going to love. That's pure, you know, he was recruited as a shooting point guard that was kind of big. And now he's just like the 6'8 monster who just, you know, is annoying to play against because he's going to fight you for every single board every single time. And that's fun to watch. And, you know, he has passion, which I really like. I think KJ brings that. I think Luke O'Brien brings that a lot. I'm not sure about anyone else that we watch a lot on this team, but it's fun. You know, Luke O'Brien gets up for himself and his teammates. And it's hard to remember this far back, but similarly, I was not expecting what I saw out of Javon Hadley, and I love what I saw, you know. Just little throwing junk at the board, little floaters that go in for no reason, weird left hooks, and just physical rim running on secondary fast breaks that was like, that works like 80% of the time, if you remember that in the non-con. I don't know. It was a fun hustle play I was not expecting. And another guy we barely talked about, I do want to talk a little bit about, even though he's having knee surgery, Javon Ruffin is exactly who I'd want to be a third or fourth guard on any team. He's so calm to me. I never felt like he was out of control when he had the ball, and defensively better than I thought.
We talked about how good Hammond was down the stretch when he became the starter. Like, there was a point where Ruff was taking his minutes.
Yep.
And I was just absolutely heartbroken when Ruff got injured, because he was really coming on. And you know, haven't heard too much about it other than it's a pretty serious injury. But the number of injuries he's had, you start thinking about, all right, does a decision need to be made here? Like, does he need to start thinking about, you know, life after basketball? You know, hey, that's between him and his doctor and his family, but you know, I'm worried about him because, you know, that's tough when you start racking up those injuries.
One of two players on the team who shot better than 35% from three, by the way, just one of two.
Also a note on the free throw shooting that you mentioned earlier, pretty much all the players coming back are good to great free throw shooters. We had a 42% who's leaving, a 53% who's leaving, and then I guess a 0% who's leaving.
Oh, no, 50%.
God. Did Quincy not take one?
53%. Quincy Allen took two, and he was 50%.
Okay.
Yeah, Neek Clifford was 53.
53%. That, wow. Okay, there's a segue. So, Ted Boyle signed three high schoolers in the early signing period. We will talk about Cody Williams later. There's another SEO hit. Cordy Anderson, of course, and Asane Jupp, who's a local big man. We only had two departing seniors that we knew of at the end of the year. So Ethan Wright, Jalen Gavadon, one-year CU Buffs, but they are still forever Buffs. Both grad transfers are leaving. Their eligibility is exhausted. Three more players left. I think we were expecting two. I think Nick Clifford was an expected transfer, and he is transferring out to hopefully greener pastures. And Quincy Allen is also transferring out after 2 years of not much going on there for him. Hope he gets to play some more minutes. And then there's an unexpected transfer, one that I think affected all of us and hurt all of us. Lawson Lovering, who some people deride, some people praise. Also announced his intent to transfer and immediately found he's the only one that had found a landing spot, which was Utah, which doubly hurts. So
yeah.
I don't want to talk too much about Lawson. Yet. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to talk about Lawson.
Well, I just want to mention Tad's comments on each before we go into it.
Okay, keep going.
We've already talked. He's a very honest man. He's not going to BS the media. I don't think he knows how. So Lawson Lovering, he said, hurt him and was unexpected. And for 24 hours, he was down in the dumps, which I do like to imagine Tad Boyle watching Bridget Jones' Diary, thinking of a seven-footer. He said that was something unexpected. Nick Clifford, he could not be more complimentary. He said he's an amazing young man, an amazing teammate, always unselfish, always a pleasure to coach, but just wants to play more minutes somewhere and be a bigger part of the offense. And based off of the list of schools that have reached out to him, I think that'll be a possibility. And then Quincy Allen, finally, Tad Boyle said he wants to play more minutes. End of. So.
To be fair, if I'm Quincy, I want to play more minutes too.
Yeah. I'll let anyone take it away in any direction they choose. I think all of our emotions are probably focused on Lawson, but I think there's some stuff to talk about.
All right, so let's talk Lawson. Let's rip this Band-Aid off. Okay. Yeah, big time bummer. When I heard that news, I was down in the dumps. It's really darn interesting how quickly he ended up in Salt Lake City. It's really darn interesting how quick that happened. And looking back, you know, he had 2 feet out the door the whole time. And hey, that's fine. You want to play with your friends in Salt Lake? That's cool. Like, you, as a human being, you should be allowed to play where you want with whom you want. Like, all right, get out of here, go. But he was developing, he was improving. And there's a part of me that goes, you're giving in to the haters, man. You know, shove up their ass, play here. You know, quiet him up, but all right. You know, he improved down the stretch a lot. Part of me now thinks maybe he was improving because his mind's already in Salt Lake and he feels the pressure's off and all this other stuff. You know, part of me also thinks, you know, given the exit strategy here, you know, go back to, you know, some of your AAU teammates, you know, get facilitated by your AAU coach, you know, what was the plan? Would that have been the plan if he didn't get injured last year too? So I don't know, a little bit of that, but so he got a lot of criticism this year, right? Most, like 90% of it was unfair and mean-spirited. Like, yeah, like, but if that's why he's leaving, like, that's kind of lame to me. You know, I understand speaking out. I understand, you know, in some ways holding against the fan base, but you're also a Power 5 athlete. There's going to be some heat with that if you're not performing. And let's not, you know, defensively, he's a defensive leader. He did so many great things off the ball. Like, he's a really good basketball player. Like, pretty high, you know, basketball IQ. Like, we're talking elite at some things here in terms of defending pick and roll, defensive, you know, leader and switches and things like that.
I mean, Jack noticed earlier in the year, he'd literally just shove his teammates into the right spot.
Like, he was calling out defensive calls. He's pointing people the right way. Like, defensively, he's elite, right? Offensively, he had a turnover ratio that you would assign typically to a freshman point guard who needs a saddle. And I'm talking like early Nate Tomlinson. I'm talking Antoine McGee. Like, centers shouldn't have a turnover ratio north of
28%.
28%.
Youch.
Like, look at Josh Scott. Look at Evan. You know, guys who more or less were playing the same position.
Yeah.
Now, the different players, certainly more offensive focused, they had half the ratio their freshman year, their first full seasons, you know, playing as Lawson did. Like, there were some problems there. And, you know, God bless him. You know, we struggled in his best games. In the 12 games, he posted an offensive rating over 100. We were 5-7. In the 17 games he posted an offensive rating under 90, we were 11-6. So how critical was he really to any success we had this year? I don't know.
I would say you'd be focusing on the wrong end of the court.
Sure. Yeah. I get that.
You'll get there. Yeah.
So what we're talking about is life after Lawson. Defensively, huge problem. Who is protecting the rim next year? We need to find athleticism and length and height in the portal. And if we don't, that's a huge problem. Offensively, maybe this helps us open things up. Maybe it helps us space the floor. Do we find someone who can pick and pop a little bit more, play a little bit with Tristan to be able to rotate out and keep that same level of spacing? So that Tristan doesn't have to carry the entire load down there. You know, part of the thing we talked about, Tristan isn't defending anybody sometimes, and that's because he can't, because he's got to put all his energy into playing offense and getting loose and getting open. So maybe there's some positives here to go with the negatives. So ultimately, what I wrote down was, maybe, I don't know. Ultimately, it all depends on the replacement.
I think we can survive him.
Yeah, how he exited kind of chaps my ass a little bit. Like, okay, you had your exit strategy before the season's over. You know, Tad tries to keep you here, and you're already gone. Okay, fine, whatever. You know, but we really need to find a replacement. And if we find a replacement, it is what it is, and we move on. And, you know, honestly, it's in the past. But if we can't find a replacement, that's a problem. Because if we go into next year with our centers – in our front line as Joe Horbert and Dio, we're in trouble.
Okay, what about Luke O'Brien, small ball five?
I don't hate it. I don't hate it.
I would say Hadley is to me an easier pick if we're gonna roll with Hadley, Williams, De Silva, KJ, insert transfer guard here, you know, as your starting five. Because Hadley has the thickness that Williams and De Silva do not have.
Yeah, playing lob at the five is kind of like playing Austin DeFault as a power forward or a five as well.
Yeah.
Like, I think we can better use him elsewhere. Like, no, he's, you know, we'll see if his shot develops to that point. But playing him as a three or a four, I think, helps out a lot. If you stick him at the five, I think it sort of limits his impact both on both sides of the court.
Yeah,
but it's modern basketball. Small five is in vogue, so I get it.
So before you go any further, Sam, let me just tell you what my Boyle said today to Pat Rooney about this. What he said: obviously, we need to sign a big. Boyle said Joe Herbert's coming up from redshirt. Tristan De Silva could play the five in a pinch, but that's not a natural position. We need to sign a post player.
Yep.
Having coached Lawson Loving now for 2 years and Evan Batty for five, we're going to look at all possible avenues. That will be a transfer portal kid because we need someone who can come in and play right away. So, similar thoughts from
Paul. Yeah, I mean, that's what we expect.
I guess to me, I was going to say, devoid of context, that Ben already mentioned it, that Lawson Levering played his AAU ball in Salt Lake City, and I would imagine his coach is still based in Salt Lake City. I was going to say that without any other context added, just out loud. But Lawson Levering, I think it was not – I'll end my thoughts with, it was nice for CU, as far as I've been watching, has never had a rim protector like that, and it was nice for 30 games to have that. And we'll see if we have it again, but for that point, it was just cool to see all these other guards think, like, maybe I don't want to go in right now. Maybe I don't want to drive all the way. And if that, all we get is 30 games of that, then I'll take what I got. Nothing, Sam. You're good.
Ultimately, and let's take a step back real quick in considering the three of them. And, you know, I talked about Lawson, positives, negatives, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you look at more or less what WAR, wins above replacement, or defensive, or box per minute, box plus minus per minute, over 100, the three lowest, quote unquote, worst players on the team are the ones who transferred.
Scholarship. Yeah.
You know, I don't think they're the worst necessarily. Like, worst is a pejorative word, but at lowest performing, let's call them, transferred out.
Yeah.
So what are we really losing out of all this equation? And that's selling all three of them short, right? That's certainly selling Lawson short. That's selling Neek short. But if you look at brass tacks, if you look at efficiency and metrics, if we can find two players in the portal. And you're talking about Cody Williams, like, those are upgrades. Those are upgrades.
Yep. So.
Yeah, I think that even, like, right now, it's, like, kind of, like, harsh to say, but, like, I think Neek Clifford is addition by subtraction just right now, like, without even thinking about the transfer coming in. Because, like, he wouldn't be in that starting lineup with Cody Williams coming in. He doesn't really seem like a good fit. Like, he didn't quite develop in the way we needed him to.
To me, it's just a total fit thing.
But yeah, fit.
Because, like, we need him to be a spot-up shooter, and he can't do that consistently.
Well, yeah, I alluded to it earlier. Like, he missed one shot in a game, and his mentality would go down a lot. And, you know, he'd check out on defense sometimes because of that. Like, his offense really affected his defense, and vice versa, to be fair.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's... And mental is a huge part of basketball. That screams to me, dude needs a new fit, new situation to find a new home. And this is not against him because, I mean, Tad talked about it. He's a good dude. Like, and I'm not saying, you know, Tad gave him a shot. He started all but two games this year, I think. You know, and even then he only played about, you know, his minutes ratio was only like 53% or something like that. So he'd start, and then performance would lead Tad to put him on the bench.
Yeah. No, there was a lot of games where he played like 2 minutes in the second half.
Right.
It just wasn't working that day.
It just wasn't working. And, you know, again, it just kind of leads to the idea that I don't think he was being played out of position or anything. There's always a little talk about, you know, oh, he's just an oversized point guard. He needs to control the ball a little bit more. And, you know, I didn't see that. I didn't see any need for him to have the ball in his hands more.
Yeah, twice as many turnovers as assists.
Yeah, right.
I mean, part of that's role, but yeah.
Part of it, yeah, part of that's role. You know, he shot under 29% from three. We talked about his free throws, 53% from the line. You know, and even there, you know, we're talking, even he was even getting to the line less. So not only was he making fewer free throws, but he's getting to the line less. And that's part of his value, is attacking and slashing. You know, he had the worst offensive efficiency from a player with at least 50% of minutes since Xavier Talton in 2015, when I looked it up.
Shout out!
Like, it just wasn't a good year. Like, it's not a good year. And, you know, whatever you think about the dude, and I really liked Quincy. I really like Neek.
I do too.
I really like the story. Local Colorado kid. I thought he was, you know, his trajectory looked strong. Tad brought him to the Pac-12 media days. We were putting him up there as like, this is a dude who's going to lead us this year. Just didn't click. I hope he finds a good spot for him. I really do. And I hope he comes back. I hope it's a team on our schedule. And I hope he comes back and he drops 30 on us. I really do.
Yeah.
Because I want him to shine in that building one more time. I really do. And I hope
for that. Did you say Kuntzus?
Yeah.
I love that. To your point, just today actually came out, according to the Portland Report on Twitter, Nick Clifford said that the following teams reached out to him: St. Bonaventure, Xavier, St. Mary's, CSU, Utah, Utah Valley, UTEP, Montana, Cal State Bakersfield, Northern Colorado, shout out again, Dalen Kuntz, Denver, Weber State, Montana State, Bowling Green, San Fran, and Eastern Washington. Everyone says he's a great guy. Everything I've heard is that he's a great guy and a great teammate. He was just slated to be something he's not. I think Taboy wanted to be something he's not, and it just hurt all year. It hurt him. It hurt CU, and he deserves a fresh start. And CU deserves a fresh start.
And thank God for the transfer portal. For the instant transfers. Like,
yes. Though he would have.
I'm glad he's not stuck.
I think he'll graduate. But yeah. That's who's going out right now. I think that's probably the end of the list, the way Tad's talking about it. Sounds like both redshirt guys, RJ Smith and Joe Herbert, are slated to play some roles next year based off the way that Tad's talking about it. And it doesn't sound like anyone else after these meetings he had last week are planning to depart. So CU has two open scholarships to play with.
I thought Hammond was a flight risk.
Well, we talked about this, Sam. I thought you made a great point of, I think Hammond's a pick and roll operator. He needs the ball in his hand. That's going to happen less next year, not more. So, if he can be a team guy and learn how to be a catch and shoot guy, that'd be fantastic. Yeah. Or like 8 minutes pick and roll, whatever. But what he needs is going to happen less next year, in my opinion. But if he can learn to be something else, that'd be great too. And same thing, supposedly a great teammate, obviously 3-year captain at Creek matters, mm-hmm. local kid matters, all that stuff.
Ben, you had thoughts?
Not really. Just in terms of would Hammond leave? I don't know that I considered him such a flight risk. I think he'd, and this is not to slight him because I think he'd be very effective in this, but I think he'd have to take a step down. Like, I don't think he could find a similar
level. Totally, yeah.
What about like an Oregon
Would you really want to go to Oregon State? Like,
no, I was just thinking. I was thinking like a lower Pac-12 team.
No, but why would you do that? We're expecting a good season next year. Like, okay, if I'm gonna go somewhere else, I want to have some success, right?
I'm just afraid he's gonna be playing like 16 minutes a game.
Well,
and not be as effective.
I think it's probably about where he might land.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I'm interested to see what we do with point guard next year. Because I think Cody can play there a lot. I think there's still a chance transition. To be fine. I know our good friend CU Goose out there on Twitter. He's streaming for one of the transfers that we use should go to a point guard. So that's always a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Is KJ the best person to be the lead guard on this team? I don't know. There's only one ball. Let's see how that kind of folds out. Would this team be better operating smaller in a smaller lineup with both Julian and KJ on the floor at the same time? We tried that a lot this year and
didn't really work.
But we're going to have a different mix next year, a different mix that can utilize that a little bit better by looking to hunt those threes and things like that.
I like the pairing of KJ and Cody a lot.
Yeah, I did.
Plus like a gunner at the two guard.
Yeah. And Julian can gun a little bit. Like, he can shoot a little bit.
That's kind of what I was hinting at earlier, where it's like, I think I want him to be more comfortable in that off-ball role.
His shot is pure, and it goes up.
Yeah.
I like his shot.
Could be that guy.
He shot 33%, right? And 92% of his threes were assisted. So he is that that hunt to get open and then let fly. He is that dude. So
slightly jumping the gun, but I do want to mention specific names. So once again, using Boyle's comments as an intro here, big man, we know CU has two open scholarships. We know one of them is going to go to a big man. We can talk about some names very briefly. He did talk about the other one as a best player available spot. So it could be a guard, could be a gunner, could be banked. He did say that as an option. He could just bank the Scully, which I would hate to see, but it's Tad. He's done it before. So
I have learned throughout the years, Tad loves to keep a scholarship in the back of his pocket because he wants to find that George King in a side gym at an April, whatever.
Yeah.
If he feels like he can bank it and he doesn't need to add to the roster, he's going to do it.
Well, I think it might be for him. Yeah, like you said, there has to be a certain level of transfer that needs to take that. And based off of how we're shooting right now, that transfer level is, see, he's going for it. I don't know if it's possible. So to start with the big man that we talked about, just want to mention some names, and Sam will have some more to add after I finish this preamble. But Khalil Ware is a name that everyone saw on Twitter. He's the Oregon five-star freshman center who played a little bit this year. He's like the third string center for Oregon. There is an obvious connection because CU coach Tab Boyle coached him as part of his duties as the under 18 head coach. And there's some familiarity. Ware had some DNP coaching decisions this year, which is a slight risk. He's long, he's athletic, he's seven foot, can shoot a little bit. And I guess my final caveat with Ware is he's currently ranked as the number one transfer on 247, and literally everyone wants Ware. So I am very doubtful that CU can put together a package that will be enticing enough for Ware to join.
I would also say I think we are kind of on the same Reddit boards of Oregon fans saying he looks like he just plays basketball because he's 7 feet tall and should play basketball.
Oregon fans. Some other people have mentioned, some other people we trust have mentioned that, there's some attitude things maybe, which I would say is the last thing a CU needs next year. But anyways.
Yeah. And you want hoopers, not people who are just kind of playing because they're supposed to be like, I don't know. You know the type.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, we all watch Wesley Gordon. anyways, I think another option that we've mentioned, heard before, is Wyoming big man Graham Ike, originally from Grandview High School in Colorado, hence a pretty obvious connection. Before some of his health problems this year, he went 19-10 at Wyoming and is a pretty natural, I guess, you know, this might be reductive, but I would consider more of a Josh Scott presence, not necessarily a Lawson Loving replacement, but one-on-one post offense, he'll get you a bucket. One-on-one post defense, he'll win most of the time. But anything past that, you're expecting stuff he's not bringing.
Could you tell me why he had only 14 blocks in 35 games last year?
I would once again refer to my Josh Scott example of like he's not really leaving the ground, and I don't know. He's not really a help.
Yeah, Josh Scott averaged like a block a game. Well, the other mostly thing on is, strips.
That Wyoming team was a mess last year, an absolute catastrophic mess. Like you want to talk about bad roster fits and needs to get blown up. That roster needed to get blown up immediately.
9-22, and they were picked like top two or three in the conference. So, yikes.
Well, I was kind of baiting you because you said he doesn't play defense.
I didn't say he doesn't play defense. I said he plays one-on-one post defense. And I'm not expecting to beat Josh Scott because Josh Scott was a 20-10 guy at the Pac-12 level, and EK is a 20-10 guy at the Mountain West level. But anyways, any thoughts on any of the big men, Sam or Ben? Before we look at potential guards,
You guys kind of talked about it with Ware. Like I've heard some interesting things about, you know, who he is and his approach and all that kind of thing. It's always enticing when you can think about that level of athlete and recruit profile. Cause I mean, he's still very young, so you can still talk about those kind of things. Like he was a five star. and that would be interesting to pair that kind of athlete with Cody Williams and KJ and you know, build a roster. Ooh, that looks fun on paper, right? EK, he makes the most sense, right? Unfortunately, similar to Ware, I think what would take to get him here in terms of name, image, and likeness deal or opportunities, I think he may end up looking elsewhere. That options list is pretty lengthy. Your top two with a bullet and those are the ones that I'd be going after too. I don't think either of them are realistic options for where we are right
now. Yeah. And some other potentially realistic options that have come up recently, Mustafa Amazil, from Dayton, I believe. Right, Sam? Am I making that up? Okay.
No.
Like you said, Dayton is just a crater, and he was a pretty good piece for them. More of a tad board the hell out of the ball, get opportunities off like putbacks and stuff when you need to. But he's been on some big, pretty big visits.
I don't think he's a true big man. I think he's a 6'9" shooter.
Yeah, he takes a lot of threes, like a lot of threes.
Yeah. Yeah.
If we're thinking of him as a center or pivot, like not really.
No, I think he'd be the gunner option, and like you want, like, because this obviously the players he's recruiting, he wants a gunner. I think he'd just be like a bigger, like you just slide Cody Williams to the two, Tristan to the three, and then Amzil would play.
Yeah,
that role.
Some other names, CU or supposedly reached out to the former UNC center Will Shaver, who didn't play that much this year, but just from what I know from the North Carolina fans in my life, Hubert Davis was allergic to bench players, so it's kind of hard to figure out who was good and who was bad on that team. From what I've heard, I don't know, but 6'10", 260, inside presence for sure. And thick as a board. So
He didn't play at all.
Yeah.
Six minutes and then redshirted last year.
Three whole periods.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Hubert Davis, I've heard from the UNC fans, they were extremely frustrated because guys just wouldn't play that weren't Caleb Love or Leaky Black. There's some names on the big man side. I like you guys, I don't think Ware and EK are incredibly realistic options. NIL wise, they're going to have money thrown at them that CU does not pay former head coaches on staff. So I don't know. That's going to be tough. And I think there's options, but big men are going – everyone wants a big man. Like, I don't know. People don't want to develop centers. They want to get developed centers. So sometimes that turns into Utah grabbing Lovering, and hopefully that turns into CU grabbing someone else who has put work into developing a big man.
Lazar Stefanovic, is that the deal we're making?
Oh God, please no.
Pass.
You don't like him?
Pass.
Okay. No. Well, he's not going to pass.
That's right. That's exactly right.
He has a pretty jumper, though. I will say, that's the only thing I'm going to say.
And hey, you have a type. You definitely need that stroke.
What? Tristan DeSarva Serbian style. Players named Serbian players named Lazar.
Yeah, maybe Nikolic has grown a few inches. We get Lazar Nikolic here as the center. So I will say the one transfer that has been rumored to be connected to CU in a more than exploratory capacity is former UNC guard forward, whatever, Dalton Knecht. Dalton Knecht went to Prairie View High School in Colorado, spent 2 years at JUCO, went to UNC, and this year really exploded as an offensive option next to Dalen Kuntz. Because of how much he exploded, he's also ranked as a top five transfer option, which means everyone wants a little piece of Connect. He is an elite shooter, an elite offensive player, efficiency wise, I think, and surprisingly good rebounder. Those are my thoughts on him. Some local radio guys have mentioned that Tad wants him and there might be mutual interest, but similarly, that's deep waters. So any thoughts there?
Yeah, his profile kind of blew up pretty quickly. There was immediately like, oh yeah, there's a tad bit of interest or whatever the line was on Twitter,
nice.
Which I rolled my eyes at. But his list kind of blew up a little bit, and I think Kansas is on there and some other random schools that you're just like, well,
UNC, Indiana, yes, yeah. Duke, UCLA,
yeah. He's ranked ahead of Caleb Love.
Yeah, and he's got great size, right? Like he's, I think, 6'7". He's got great size. We've seen him. I mean, this year he dropped 24, I think, against us. Yes,
and incredible efficiency.
Yeah, yeah. He passes the eye check test and all those kind of things. So I get it. It's not just a fluke. And he had some huge games this year. And it would be a nice story, right? Like Ted going back to his Greeley roots, grabbing up another Greeley kid and bringing him with him. Like, oh, that'd be a nice, cute little story. But yeah, I'm starting to think that one's a little something too.
Yeah.
So then that's where I start to think that, we're probably going to bank that second one.
I will say connect as a fit is like perfection.
Yeah, 200 attempted threes
last year, 38% clip. That is volume and efficiency. He knows how to hunt his shot when you need him to. He's tall, he can board. You put him next to KJ and Cody Williams and you say, like, run around the perimeter, do Klay Thompson shit, and have a good time. So
he's good in the pick and roll too.
Yeah. Just to underline this, there's a 247 article that came out yesterday saying how Pride Northern Colorado transfer Dalton Knecht fits with top contenders. The list of fits, we are number one, so go see you. But everyone else here is Illinois, Arizona State, Ole Miss, Washington, Nebraska, Oklahoma, Utah, LSU, Iowa State, Indiana, Missouri, Kansas, Arkansas, North Carolina, and Oregon. Like everyone. Yeah, and
boy, he just screams Oregon to me. I can even see him in the jersey.
Really? No,
I can already see him in that jersey, and interesting, just beating the hell out of it.
To me, I'm picturing Arizona State just because of Cody Justice and how he haunts my dreams.
Yeah, I knew you were going with that.
I am not sure I would sign on to that.
Well, I wouldn't either.
If I was making a choice. Okay, so we talked about it like an hour ago, right? Like,
where would you go?
There's that coin flip, right? There's that coin flip of that last second shot that Arizona State won in Boulder.
Desmond Cambridge.
If Cambridge rims that shot out,
Hurley's fired.
Hurley still there? Do they
pass that? If Cambridge misses the three-quarter court heave to beat Arizona,
it's Arizona.
Same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, is Hurley still there? Did they make the tournament? Probably not.
No. Yeah, and
you know, you've already seen DJ Horn transfer out, and like, I don't know.
Well, and this is going to be now Jack's crap on ASU segment, but Ray Anderson is not committed to winning in any sort of way. Michael Crow, their president, does not give a crap about athletics at all, so he's allowing Ray Anderson to be employed. It's just a disaster top to bottom right there. You know, their football strategy appears to be hire local guy who gets local recruits, and we've all seen that and seen what that tries to look like. I don't know. So anyways, I'm very anti ASU at the moment. I am always.
I wake up in the morning and then I'm just like, man, I really hate Arizona State.
But if I had to choose where I would go, of that list, Sam, I don't know. Illinois would kind of be fun. A lot of minutes going around there. Brad Underwood is a total hard ass, which would suck, but I don't know.
I wouldn't go to Illinois if I was Dalton. No.
Let's see.
I'm Illinois legacy. Like, I love the ILL, you know, like, believe me. Yeah. I don't know that I would. No, I wouldn't go there.
I guess Indiana would be fun. There's definitely minutes. Kansas is the pick. I'll pick Kansas. I love Bill Self.
Yeah.
Anyways, Connect, I don't think is a super realistic option. Another guard I want to briefly mention, TJ Bamba, went to high school in Denver. Tab Boyle loves TJ Bamba. But so does everyone else in the country. So
my ears perked up when I saw him hit the portal. My ears really perked up when I saw Bamba's name. I was like, oh, hi.
Yeah. Yep. And but
he tore us apart.
Yeah, and 15-point per game guards that are in the portal and are good teammates are hard to come by. So I would imagine he will also have a long list for his services if he doesn't stay in the draft. Anyways, I think that's like the level that CU is currently shooting for, which is high waters. And if they stay there, I think next year's team has loads and loads of potential. Last name I want to mention here before we get a little bit deeper into the Cody Williams era. He hit the portal literally an hour before we recorded today, and I know Tad loves him. Tamar Bates, I think, is a name to look at, coming from Indiana. Tamar Bates visited CU once upon a time. You know, stop me if you've heard this before for Tad Boyle, but he's a large lefty combo guard who plays a lot of defense and has a large wingspan. His shot is just god ugly. And he's transferring from Indiana. I believe he went to Indiana after Texas fired Shaka Smart. And this is purely off of memory, so I might be wrong. But yes, that is the Tamar Bates saga so far. 6 points last year for Indiana. I just think he's a fit for Ted's system. So anyways, a name to look at.
I like that idea.
Let's stop talking about potential. members of next year's team is talk about next year's team. So Cody Williams played in the McDonald's All-American game for some reason on the East team. I don't know why, but he was. He started, and I watched a little. I watched that game and some highlights of his senior year. Everything we've seen about Cody Williams is that he has continued to live up to his billing and then some. A consistent, explosive performer all year, and definitely took his point forward role by the reins. Likes to distribute, can definitely score. And from what I saw in the McDonald's All-American game, I don't know if CU has had a dude that can get up that easily in a long time. Definitely not in that frame. So I was very excited watching that.
So, I mean, he's got a couple extra inches, but the way he kind of glides into the lane and just lets his length speak for itself and getting to the rim really reminds me of Alec Burks his freshman year.
I thought of him too earlier.
Yeah. So I don't want to compare to the shot because Alec had problems with the shot, and I don't want to compare defensively because Alec, he was a scorer.
One track mind.
But the way Cody gets into the lane and attacks the rim and just kind of slides his way through just uses the length to get to the rim.
Yeah.
That reminded me so much of Alec. And, you want to sign up for another season of Alec? I'll take that.
I'm shocked every time I watch him do it. And he has this little move, and it's I don't even think it's that crazy. I just love it so much because it's all his length, where it looks like he's almost parallel to the backboard, and he just does a little left hand, like, I'm just going to roll it up right here, and I'm going to go in because I have a 7-foot wingspan, and I'm faster than you. So it's like he's waiting till he's almost in the baseline, just goes, whoop, this is in now. And it's just so, so smooth when he drives with his left. And that's going to be, I don't know. And he distributes well, I think. He had a nice outlet pass, a few nice outlet passes in the All-Star game.
He had a couple nice ones, yeah. Those were, I'm excited for that. That was what made me excited.
Yeah, we mentioned his fit next to KJ. KJ is a ball-dominant player. I don't think he's necessarily a pass-first ball-dominant player like maybe McKinley was before him. And I think this is a really, really interesting composition where I think Cody might be the guy who initiates the offense, so KJ can taunt his shot a bit more. And then you have people like De Silva just roaming around getting his too. I think Williams puts a lot of pressure off KJ to be the starter of the offense and allows him to be more of the finisher.
Cody will fit into a team basketball setting more than most of those five-star one-and-dones would, because he's just kind of just naturally does the little things well. Like, he sets screens for guys. He cuts when he needs to. And he makes cuts that don't open himself up but open up other people. And I think that he's just, like, he seems selfless.
He's a good capital B basketball player, you know, high basketball, that kind of guy. Yeah, a lot of really smart things, you know, and you can see in watching him, you can see exactly why Tad would be attracted to that level of talent. You know, when you're working in those echelons, that's the kind of guy like a Tad would go after.
Yeah, he had some interesting comments too. They asked him. He was, you know, he had media at the McDonald's All-American game. He was just talking about the difference between him and his brother being a better shooter than he was, him being a better overall offensive player at this point in their careers.
Damn.
You know,
also, Jalen, have you been following Jalen at all?
Well, people have mentioned the reason that Cody Williams has made such an ascendant rise of the rankings is not only because he's getting better, but it's because Jalen Williams has, like, proven out as a rookie this whole time. And, you know, bloodlines apparently matter a big deal in the NBA. So. Yeah.
They do in all professional sports, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. Did we lose him?
Uh-oh. He said in the 2 a.m. block. But we can move on past that. Williams is joining in. Potential transfers. We talked about how that might free up KJ a little bit. Tristan a little bit. I'm just excited to see Hadley and O'Brien in what I would consider – cleaner roles for them. I don't know, like, if you can give me a combined 40 minutes between those two, that's just pure effort and boards, I'm super happy with that, whether that's starting or on the bench.
Yeah, 100%. You know, I was actually thinking, like, okay, so what is Hadley's role next year? Like, is it still the starter? You know, could you like Would you rather have Hadley coming off the bench, or would you rather have Luke O'Brien coming off the bench? And I'm not decided either way on that. My gut instinct says Luke. Let him be the starter. I think he's earned it. And that's not Hadley didn't have the opportunity because he hurt himself down the stretch. But, I think Luke's play sort of tilts that in my mind in his favor. Is that the best use of Luke, however? Would he be more effective playing those 25 minutes as part of the second unit and adding that energy to things and all that? And I'm undecided on that, but one of those two should be the starter, should start along with KJ and Tristan and Cody. And then do you have that transfer forward to plug in with them, or are you adding in the gunner? Are you adding in, whatever, Bronny maybe, I don't know. But or are you going with Hammond, or are you going with Courtney Anderson or RJ Smith or one of those guys? Like, who emerges to be that fifth starter, I think, is going to be an interesting dynamic.
And who are those other four starters for anyone whose feed abruptly cut off and just got back in?
We were talking, or I was talking about KJ, Cody, obvious, Tristan, under the assumption that Tristan does not stay in the draft and comes back.
Yeah.
Those three plus one of Hadley or Luke O'Brien.
Okay.
I will say Luke O'Brien to me becomes a very, very attractive option if he can get closer to that 40% mark he was hitting and from 3 2 years ago. He was getting better near the end of this year, I thought, and as a whole, and including at shooting. It definitely felt less hesitant, which I thought was a huge thing for him early on in his career, that he would hesitate to shoot. And it felt like he was letting it fly a little more. And maybe I'm just remembering the makes more because he hit some pretty big shots down the stretch to keep CU winning.
He was absolutely much more screw it, let fly. He was much more confident the final month and a half of the season. That's the Luke I want to see offensively. Don't just go 0-for-1, go 1-for-5. Absolutely take your shots. Don't pass them up. Don't pass that ball. If you're open in the corner, you get it. Fire.
Yeah. Well, and so if he can do that and get to like 35%, 36%, 37% from three, that's a really big asset because that's a dude that can get you like 15 boards one night and then, 18 points on five threes the next night or something. It would be an incredible story. And Hadley, I think, is a little more limited offensively just because he doesn't really have that shot, at least hasn't shown that shot. In the words of Patrick Ewing, he's never shot that shot. He ever shot that shot? But he does bring, I think, obviously defensive intensity, defensive versatility, sharp elbows in the paint, a lot of stuff. So I don't know. I next year, I think we'll have to, by necessity, be more offensively focused and probably has to push the pace a little bit more. Like, they were fast this year, but they're going to have to be really fast, I think, next year to really try to take advantage of what they have. I don't know. Sam, you chose a Youngstown State shirt. Anything else to say?
Oh, did I? I didn't mean to. I'm the only one wearing home field. I have nothing else to say. I was not listening at the moment.
Sweet. I will say, not that I'm entertaining this as a real possibility, Bronny James is a 3-and-D guy next year. Would be pretty cool.
Okay, can I talk about how stupid this whole thing is? Can I talk about how dumb this is?
Sure.
Yes.
Go
off.
I'm pretty sure this dude's just joking, right? Like,
yeah,
my sense of it is one of a couple things. Obviously, he may just be completely trolling. He may be completely talking about out of his ass. Look, those are realm of possibility things. But my sense of it is he's joking with the dude he's talking about, because this was a response. This wasn't like a lead tweet. And my sense was he was kind of playing with him because he wanted, hey, Oregon, right, instead of USC. He's like, no, Colorado, like literally like any other team. Like, I get the whole prime thing, but prime coaches football, like, what has he got to do with this at all? Like, what would you, if you were Ted Boyle and Coach Prime went out and recruited somebody for you, and like, obviously Ted would take Bronny, of course, But let's say he goes out and recruits someone for you. Like, what would you do? You would throw a freaking fit. Of course you would. Like, what do you want me to do with your program too? Like,
until Jack Boyle becomes our next kicker.
And I'm not saying that's what Prime is doing. I believe this whole thing is garbage, made up internet garbage that no one should be paying attention to.
We are paying attention to it because we get some headlines
out of it. Sure. Yeah, get your clicks. I get it. I'm not saying that, you know, hey, I get it. Hustle. Gotta stay on that hustle. But my God, like, the whole thing blew up in 30 seconds. I'm like, when has this ever, like, have we ever even talked to Bronny? Does Bronny even know that there is a University of Colorado that plays?
He does not have an offer from us, I don't think.
All Buffs, I looked this up. All Buffs doesn't even have a recruiting profile for him.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I will say, Ben, you're really poking holes in our next article, which is Bronny James smoke mean LeBron to Denver? but yes.
Jeff will have sources for us.
I don't think it's an option. I do think Tate Frazier has legit connects because he's broken stuff before, whether on accident or on purpose. Most importantly, I think he has connects like in the shoe game, which, as we all know, does run quite a bit of upper level college basketball recruiting. However, he is also a troll, and like, this is likely, I mean, even if CU is the second team, it is by name association, it's USC. Like, he's going to be playing in LA next year. He just is.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Anyways.
Are we afraid of USC? Because Bronny is good. And then have Collier.
Collier is really good. I don't know. I mean, Tab has beaten Enfield more often than he's lost, but they smacked CU this year. So I don't know.
Well, yeah.
I think Cody's a very good ad, even from a basketball standpoint, and then his talent allows him to be potentially transcendental. I'm not expecting anything crazy stat line wise, but I don't know, like a, what are we saying? Like a 12-4-4. Does that sound right? 10-4-4, 10-6-4.
I would certainly hope for more.
I understand
the whole, okay, he's a top 10 player in a year where it's kind of a down class. I get that.
Oh, it's a really bad class.
I get that part of it. But if he's only getting 10 or 12 a game, that seems a little low for me. Like the 4-4, yeah, okay. That'd be dope. Certainly 4 assists, that'd be pretty nice. But 12 points, 10, 12 points, like if he averaged 11, I would feel like we're missing something here. Like we haven't opened up the nut here. You know,
okay.
I would expect more in the 15-16 range.
Really?
Because that's where lead scorers are in Tad's system.
I don't think he's a lead scorer.
He certainly should be up there. He certainly should be on pace with okay, assuming KJ doesn't show up next year as a 35% 3-point shooter. Like, let's make that assumption.
Yeah.
Assuming he doesn't show up, I mean, that's where KJ is going to be. He's going to be in the 16-ish range. Well, that's where he was this year, and I don't think – I think that's more or less towards his peak. that's where I would expect a lead performer to be in Tad's system, and I think more or less Cody will be in that range.
Okay. I was thinking of him as the second. I'm thinking De Silva is the de facto first option every time he's
on the court. Oh, Tristan's going to have a huge – he's going to have a monster year.
Yeah,
like I think he's proven, and I'll go back to my my reverse jinx hating once we get closer to November. But since I'm off the clock now, when it comes to that, Tristan's gonna have a monster year next year.
Was I'm trying to remember the last time CU returned to first team all pack. Was McKinley right all pack before his senior year?
I believe like first team. He might have been second because that was his hurt his shoulder year. Was year?
Oh yeah, so he was second team, then first team, and then he came back first team.
Yeah.
He came back. He was first team twice.
Yeah, Josh Scott was first team, I think, three times.
Yes, I was gonna say that was my last guy. And if De Silva can provide Josh Scott senior, I mean, how many times do you have to say it? Josh Scott was in the NCAA tournament, and the starting point guard was Thomas Akiazili. Like no, that wait, is was an incredible it year. Was he saying was it Talton?
I think it was Talton.
Really? I thought it was Akiazili. Either way. like, I don't know. King has gone.
You're going to make me look up the trauma of the 2014-15 Buffs.
McKinley Wright was first team in 2020, so his junior year. Wait. No, his senior year. He was
16-17.
His senior year, he was first team. Yes. Wow. See, and he was the only CU player on first or second team all pack. That's insane.
I think you've erased the Dom Collier experience from your mind.
Well, yeah. he was sixth man of the year that year, I thought.
No, he started.
Okay. Well,
yeah.
I don't think that disproves that Josh Scott carried that team.
It was Collier, Fortune, and then Talton started 10 games. That's a bad
once again.
Rotation.
Yeah, I was about to say Josh Scott still carried the hell out of that team, him and King. And if the
Akazili too. Oh yeah.
If De Silva can do something like that, that's an incredible year. And I don't think you'll have to do the offensive work that Scott did one-on-one. But I do want to see De Silva roam a little bit more if he could, you know, run more plays for him. Near the end of the year, he was doing that weird, like, one-legged step back fadeaway that was going in like 50% of the time. That's just like unguardable, you know? Like, I don't know. I would love to see him take the next step of hunting more around the perimeter, more taking the pump fake, two dribbles going all the way in this time, as opposed to stopping for a pop. You know, I don't know. I think he could be really, really special next year on the offensive side of the ball. And maybe the way it goes, Ben, is De Silva half court. And then if Williams gets the board, he is just sprinting it. And
yeah,
maybe that's
what I was going to say, I think it'll be hopefully 12-6 and 12.6 rebounds, 3 assists, where he just pushes it a lot. I think that's his strength right now. I think he is kind of not that strong with the ball right now. His shot is a bit janky. He does have some growing to do on the offensive end.
Sure. But
I also think he might be a little passive.
Is he getting the call? Is he getting a whistle to get to the line? And is he converting on those ends? That's a huge contributor to your end line. We've seen so many Colorado players, particularly earlier in their career, they don't get that whistle. Ken had to earn that whistle, for example.
It took him 3.5 years to get that whistle.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I'm overselling his point guard abilities. I think he's going to initiate the offense next year. I don't know. I think we'll see KJ off ball a lot. No?
My expectation is there's going to be some sort of, you know, numbers justification between KJ and Cody sharing the rock, right? Does that mean KJ is, you know, facilitating a little bit more and maybe doesn't take all those shots and only scores when needed or only guns when needed? You know, that might dictate, all right, what are our averages here? Who's leading score? Things like that. I think KJ, no, if you go into the season knowing, all right, Tristan's going to put up huge numbers, maybe I don't need to feel the pressure to put up everything. I don't know. You know, maybe that's part of it. But I think there's going to be a justification down between Cody and KJ where maybe KJ doesn't max out his numbers because here's this guy I can facilitate with.
And I think like I kind of mentioned it, but having the two of them together on the floor makes such a big difference for the offense.
Yes.
Just in terms of like playmaking ability as a second ball handler.
Yes.
Because yeah, we kind of saw what happens when you don't have that.
I also think Williams will have a unique ability to have passing angles that KJ does not have just with his height.
The two-man game, the two-man game potential between Tristan and Cody is really fun.
Ooh, like, filthy. Really, they're both so smart.
That's really fun.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know. The offensive side of the ball is exciting. And if CU manages to add a pure shooter who does not need to dribble the ball to score points, I think that'd be perfection.
Was there any word on Chance McMillian, the Grand Canyon transfer?
Other than that CU's made contact, no.
Okay.
But I don't know.
He's a gross shooter. Like,
very good, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's gross.
Well, that would be a good fit. And defensively, that's where it gets a little bit weird. I think we're going to, boy, I don't even know. Who do you rely on the guard rotation? Who's the defender? Is it Courtney Anderson? Is it RJ Ooh. Smith? I don't even know.
I am interested to see which of those two emerges. I'm pretty high on Courtney. I'm pretty damn high. Another slightly under-heralded California guard. Like, we've got a good history of those guys. And I'm really interested to see how he hits the ground.
I mean, NFL linebacker son, 6'6", long wingspan. I think CU this year was missing, and this is going to be a stupid thing to say, so I apologize, but was missing a Eli Parquet presence of just like a big dude who locks down outside. Just wasn't anything like that this year. Maybe that was supposed to be Clifford. I don't know, but I am excited to see a tad burly guard again.
I think it was supposed to be Clifford. It was supposed to be Gabbadon and Clifford in combination, I think.
And Gabbadon, I don't know. I didn't mind it, but, you know, definitely was not quite there.
I mean, he was the Ivy League Pac-12 defense, or he was Ivy League defense player of the year.
Yeah. Yeah.
You just put into my mind was Eli Parquet played this season, and I didn't hear about it at all.
He was injured half the year.
Okay. And the team wasn't very good. Is that
UNLV.
What happened?
Okay. Yeah, he hurt his ankle.
Okay.
UNLV did not realize he was still in college.
Lon Kruger's son got that job, and it was like his first year, I think. So
yeah,
it was a transition.
Well, he's like 32. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, yeah, I think next year's offense is exciting. Cody Williams is a piece that CU just hasn't had, obviously. They just haven't had a guy that's like that on offense. And I hope that his potential is maximized. I know that Tad is talking like he wants it to be maximized. One guy we haven't mentioned at all, really, except for to say that it would be a problem if he's a starting center, is Joe Hurlburt. I'm expecting almost nothing next year from him. I don't know. Is everyone else also there?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, so this is my problem when you get small state, highly ranked players is – they haven't played against anybody. Like, yeah, they've been on the AAU circuit, but they haven't played against anybody. So you don't really know who they are. I saw, 5 minutes, 10 minutes of Joe Hurlburt this year in some exhibitions and some open practices, and that's it. Is that enough to go off of? No. More or less, my opinion of him will be formed come October. And until I see what he's done in the weight room, and until I see, is he comfortable at this level, until I'm able to make an accurate call about that, I can't really make a decision one way or another. My sense is he can't be the guy yet. He will need more time.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been surprised before.
It just sounds like he wasn't ready for the Pac-12, which makes sense. Like you said, he's from Enderlin, North Dakota. So, I don't know. I don't know if he's ever going to be an inside guy either. But big schools wanted him. A lot of Big Ten schools wanted him. And I think he does have touch. So, I don't know. I'm really not expecting anything from him this year. I'm expecting more from Giob, honestly. I expect Giob to play quite a few minutes, but that might just be wishful thinking. I don't know. Anything else before we close this out?
I have nothing.
Nothing from me. I'm good, man.
Cool. Well, you can find Roman Buff on Twitter, where he's a Final Four or potential tournament winner, as best Twitter account to follow. Is it at Rumbling Buff?
It's at Rumbling Buffalo.
Buffalo, excuse me. Will we be seeing? Are you going to the spring game?
Oh yes, I have my ticket.
Okay.
I don't know how that's going to work with 40,000 people having GA seats trying to jam in there. That'll be interesting. That'll be fun. I'm sure there'll be no fights. I'm going to spring game. There will be some alumni band events for those of you of that persuasion. There will be some alumni band events alongside. I know there's a picnic. Our annual alumni band picnic will be in conjunction with the alumni game or the spring game. We will be out and about.
Nice. I would bet, and maybe it won't take this long to get these guys in here, but Chad loves using football games for recruiting. I wonder if that is going through his head. I don't know what the transfer window looks like.
How good does Tad look having one of the suites? Apparently, Jeremy Bloom can't even get a suite. I'm pretty sure Tad has a suite. Like, yes, damn, he does. Man, that is some thinking ahead right there.
Good job. I had a nice talk with Ben Mills going up to Tad's suite last year in the TCU game.
I was up the first shout out. Go ahead.
Yeah, the man who beat Joel Embiid so bad that he's scared to come back to altitude.
Still won't play in Colorado because of that. I wonder if that's going to be used for basketball. It certainly will be for football. And we both talked about it, but man, I want to see one of those donor functions where it's Tad Boyle and Dion giving talks back to back. Just incredible.
Tad in his khakis. Oh yeah. That's good.
All right. Well, that was, I think, exhaustive and fully formed. So once again, thanks for coming on, Ben.
Absolutely. Look forward to the next run.
Woo! We did it. Cody Williams season starts now.
Buzz! 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 Buzz!